Today's Teisho will be on case 33 in the Hikigan Roku, case 33 in the Blue Rock Collection, P.N. Lu. Case 33 is entitled Chinso Shosho Comes to Visit Shifuku. Engo's introduction, he does not distinguish east from west, nor north from south. From morning to evening, from evening to morning, so he remains. Can he be called asleep? Sometimes his eyes are like shooting stars. Can we call him wide awake? Sometimes he points to the south, calling it the north. Tell me, is he mindful or mindless? Is he a man of enlightenment or mediocrity? If you thoroughly understand this topic and know the secret of it, you will realize how the ancient masters went this way and that. Tell me, what season of life is this? See the following. Main subject. Chinso came to see Shifuku. Shifuku drew a circle in the air. Chinso said, I have no object in coming here. Why do you bother to draw a circle? Shifuku closed the door of his room. Secho says Chinso has only one eye. Secho's verse, perfect the circle, pure the sound, bright and abundant the encircling jade. Loaded on horses and mules, loaded on board the iron boats given to those who know the peace and freedom of land and sea. He put down the tackle to fish the turtle. Secho's comments here, monks throughout the world can't jump out of it. Thank you all very much for coming to practice this morning at this day one of our sesshin. You know, sesshin is the heart of Zen practice. It's so important to practice on a daily basis, on a regular basis. You might not be able to sit every day, but it's very important to practice regularly. And, you know, when we get together in the evening or on Saturdays for more sustained sittings, say three periods, that makes a big difference. You know, there are people who sit 20 minutes a day, and that's commendable, but you know, being able to sit for longer periods of time is really crucial to working through our obstacles. So something like what we're doing here is absolutely crucial. You know, sustained sitting for many hours makes your legs tired, but it purifies body, mind, and heart. And that's when we begin to really do the crucial work of liberating ourselves from our illusions and encountering the world with fewer obstacles, eventually with no obstacles. And today everybody was, you know, through the miracle of Zoom, everybody was sitting very still, very straight. It's wonderful to see. And I want to thank you all for making that effort. If you think about it, Zazen seems very highly regimented. So, you know, normally you get up, if you have a job, you have to get up at a certain time. You may be going back to work now, or you still may be working online. But if you are driving back to your job now, you know it's 45 minutes to get from Edison to someplace. And so you know you have to get up at 7 and you get up at 7. But there may be more latitude than that, you know, especially like on an off day. You can get up when you want. You can have coffee when you want. You can eat lunch when you want, you know. I was just reading the other day about these people in the Amazon. They're a group of people in the Amazon, and they've been much studied by anthropologists, but they say that actually they don't even have what we would call a good night's sleep. You know, in their society, people sleep when they want to sleep. They said normally people sleep during the day, a couple hours here, a couple hours there. And they spend all night socializing, or they go out hunting, and they're hunting and gathering people. So they don't structure their time at all, right? And, you know, I think we all enjoy having unstructured time, you know, where you can just get up when you want, eat when you want, read a little bit. That's lovely. And when we think about having unstructured time like that, you know, that feels like freedom. So, you know, when you go to your job, there's very little of that kind of unstructured time. You know, as soon as you get into your job, in fact, probably even before, you know, you get up in the morning, the first thing you might do is look at your emails, and already there's stuff coming over the transom from your work. You know, basically, for many years of my life, you know, when I turn on the computer and I look at the emails, it might take me a couple hours to get through all my emails. You know. And that feels very unfree somehow, right? You know. So we have a highly structured society, and it doesn't feel very free. When we have our off days, when we have our moments of unstructured time, it can feel delicious, right? Really delicious and wonderful. So it's complicated, right? I mean, what we're doing, you're taking time, many of you have taken time off from your jobs, and you're coming to Sesshin, and actually it's as highly scheduled as your job, right? And if you were to tell somebody what you're doing, they might not understand. You know, I took 5 days off. I'm taking 3 days off this week so I can go to a 5-day retreat. They might think, oh, how wonderful, you know, a retreat, you know, you're going to get up and have, time to just look at the grass and look at the clouds and walk around. And in fact, you know, traditionally, there is time for some of that. I mean, when we used to have our sesshins at Murray Grove, and hopefully we'll have a August sesshin at Murray Grove again, you know, there's time to go outside and look at the flowers, and they plant beautiful flower beds around the main building. But, you know, we're coming here and having a highly structured experience. So instead of downtime, instead of free time, it's like very structured. And you know, the interesting thing is that this can feel like the opposite of freedom for a while, at any rate. You know, and then you begin to experience that, you begin to experience, what should I say, your confinement differently, right? When we start going through sesshin, the interesting thing is that we ourselves begin to change, I think, really profoundly. You know, so I myself have been doing sesshins for like 40 years. In fact, more than 40 years. And I would come to sesshin laden with, loaded down with problems. And you know, on the first day of sesshin, I'd be sitting on the cushion just thinking about all the things I should be doing and wasn't doing. And all this, and you know, I would be rehearsing all the things that stressed me out, you know. The structure of sesshin helps. It helps. You know, it's like by carefully structuring each element of sesshin, we're allowing people to, you could say, make a break with all of those mental habits and all of those daily routines that, you know, that we carry around with us even when we think we're having unstructured time, you know? So I don't know if you ever had this experience, but, you know, I remember many years ago I had written a book. It was my first book, and it was the book that, if you're an academic, if you're a professor, you know, when you write a book, you have to write a book for tenure to get a lifetime appointment. And if you don't write the book, you don't get the lifetime appointment. After 5 years, you have to leave your job, find another job. So there's a lot of pressure. And when you write the book, you want it to be a good book because all of these people are going to review your book and pass judgment on it. So it goes out to people who are called readers, and they're from other universities, and they read it, and they'll say, oh, this is a good book, or they'll say, oh, this is not a good book. And then, you know, basically, if they judge it to be a good book, a committee of your peers, of other professors, will say, this person should be kept here instead of fired. So there's this tremendous pressure. So, you know, I finished this book, and I sent it out to the press, and they sent me back what are called page proofs. This is before it actually goes into print. These are the printed, this is like the way it's going to look when it's in the book. You know, basically, they're photographs, they're proofs, they're laid out like real type, just like a real book. And you're supposed to proofread it. That's what proofreading is, proofreading. And if you find any mistakes, you're supposed to write them back. And they will correct those before they take the photos that make the book, the photographs of each page. So anyway, I was scheduled to go on vacation, and the page proofs came. And the page proofs for this book were filled with errors. I had corrected the errors earlier, but when it went to the publisher, the printing house, rather, they put the errors back in or didn't correct the errors. In fact, English wasn't actually the language of the publishers. I think it was being published in Hong Kong. So for some reason, there were like all these mistakes. And I had to work on that right up until the minute I was scheduled to go on my vacation. And when I got on my vacation, you know, all I could think about was this crisis with my book, you know. So I was in New Mexico. I don't know if you've ever been to New Mexico, but it's very beautiful. And I was in the city of Santa Fe, which is this magical city in the mountains of New Mexico. And it's above the desert. It's sort of in the foothills of these beautiful mountains. And the buildings are all made out of adobe. They're made out of very beautiful sort of mud brick architecture, you know. And you know, the town is like a magical dream. But I could not be present with this town. I couldn't enjoy the mountains or the sky. All I could think of was the page proofs. And I tried so many things to distract myself. I went to the museum. You know, I was like very, 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 very upset with myself and with the situation. And I felt really trapped. I felt like, you know, how is this happening to me? I've done everything I did everything I was supposed to do in the best possible way, right, that I could. And, you know, what was supposed to happen is that I send off the manuscript, they make the page proofs, I, you know, correct everything, and it all gets corrected, and then it gets printed, and the professors read it, and they go give this guy a job. And instead, I had this nightmare situation where it was going to go out with all these errors. And people are going to read it and go, this guy's an idiot. Fire him yesterday, right? So I couldn't get out of that. You know, it was like the vacation from hell. And, you know, towards the end of the vacation, I was so unhappy. And I suddenly realized, you know, why don't I do what I've been training to do? I have been training in a Zen center in Seattle, Washington. I said, why don't I just get back to my practice? So, you know, I got up in the morning and, you know, like at the usual 5 o'clock, and I started doing Zazen. And, you know, for the first like hour of sitting, it was just like the hysteria of my reaction to my situation, right? This is so undeserved. And this shouldn't be happening to me. And I haven't done anything to, you know, to deserve this. And I'm a good guy and I'm competent, you know, and so on and so on. You know, but I actually like did a little mini sesshin. And I got up, I did 3 sits, and then I got up and I did kinhin. You know, and then I did 2 more sits, you know, and then I did kinhin. Then I had lunch, you know, of my friends and family had gone. I sort of by myself. And, you know, about half a day of this, it was like I was sort of coming off the ceiling. I was peeling myself off the ceiling. And I remember going out behind my mother and father-in-law's house. In Albuquerque, and they have this beautiful backyard with three ash trees, and there's a pond, and there's a couple fruit trees, and for the first time since I had gotten there, you know, I began to feel aware of my surroundings. It was like, you know, I was in this, in my head, so much. And sort of in these fears and anxieties so much that I couldn't see anything. You know, and the interesting thing is that those anxieties, those fears, have this effect of increasing your isolation, your sense of separateness. Fear makes us withdraw from the world. And you know, if you keep withdrawing from the world like that, you eventually become depressed, right? I mean, we're afraid because we're afraid of being hurt or injured. And so we keep withdrawing deeper and deeper into our, sort of, you could say, our solitude. But as we withdraw to our solitude, we get, you could say, lonelier and sadder. And trying to divert yourself is not necessarily a successful strategy. You know, so what I did instead was to actually like go through this Zazen routine, right? Where, you know, get up at 5, sit down on the cushion, do 3 hours of sitting, have a cup of coffee, go to the bathroom, do 2 more hours of sitting, do some walking meditation, breathing. And the interesting thing was, even though that seems very confining, it had the opposite effect, right? It's like that experience of like structuring my time, structuring my life, and you could say like structuring my consciousness, right? Actually created this great, it was like my whole body could relax. And after like half a day of this, I was so much better. And it was more effective in terms of helping me to cope with the crisis than, you know, days and days of trying to divert myself with free time. So, you know, one way to think about freedom is that it's the absence of any kind of structures or any kind of limitations. But, you know, actually, that's not necessarily liberating. That's not necessarily freedom. You know, this highly structured life that we lead at Sesshin has a kind of liberating quality, even though it's highly structured, or maybe because it's highly structured. I hope this is making some sense, but I think you'll, if you haven't begun to experience this for yourself, you'll begin to experience it at Sashin. It's like, you know, if you have, if somebody, if you go out to have coffee with somebody you're trying to impress, you know, you can choose any kind of Starbucks coffee you want. So somebody says, let's meet at Starbucks. And you say, okay, and you're trying to, maybe you're trying to, you want them to give you a job, or you want them to think you're a very creative person. And your friend orders coffee and then it's your turn. And you can think, okay, what kind of coffee should I order? You know, if I get a regular brewed coffee, sort of bottom line coffee, does that mean I'm not an imaginative person? If I get a cafe Americano, does that mean I'm more discerning? If I get a Frappuccino, does that mean I'm like a frivolous person who doesn't have any self-control? You know, you can start worrying about the kind of coffee you order and the kind of image it's going to create. And, you know, actually, we do that all the time. Right, that's what we often think of as expressing ourselves, but actually, you know, it's actually trapping us in like this maze of social expectations and self-judgment. Ordering a cup of coffee isn't necessarily free at all, because there's all these constraints around it, these social constraints. Same thing with clothes, right? I mean, you know, when I go to work, I have like a little uniform I wear at work. I often wear like a blue Oxford cloth shirt and blue jeans or some slacks. And it's always the same every day. And in fact, I've had people comment on this. I've had one student once said to me, you know, you're always wearing the same clothes. And I explained that I find this so liberating, right? I don't have to worry about projecting a certain image. I'm just wearing clothes that are sort of socially acceptable. And now I don't have to worry about my clothes. Right? So one way to understand the practice of Sashin is to say, look, if we just give you the coffee you're going to have for the day, you have a different relationship to your coffee, right? Now you don't have to express yourself or achieve anything. You just have to drink the coffee. And you can say, well, maybe I don't like that coffee, see. Maybe that's not the coffee I wanted. But that's an interesting place to be, because, you know, this is the only coffee you can have. So what are you going to do about it? And one thing you can do is to say, I hate this coffee, I'm not going to drink it. Another thing you could do is drink the coffee, but say, I hate this coffee. You know, and there's a whole range of responses you could have to the coffee. But, you know, one possible response to the coffee is just to be present with the coffee in a non-judgmental way. And that's a kind of liberation, I think, that's deeper than choice. That's a kind of liberation that's deeper than choice. Mark Lesniak, can you seem to be, your screen seems to be strobing. Is there a way to stop that? Okay. Thanks. Okay. One way to enjoy the coffee is to get the coffee you want. But another way to enjoy the coffee is to enjoy the coffee you get. And it's a totally different experience, right? It's like, you know, this is what you have to drink. And you can You can say, I don't like this, I hate this, this is not what I wanted. And you can go through a range of emotions. You can get angry, you can feel bitter, you can feel cheated. But eventually what happens is, you just drink the coffee. And it doesn't matter, because in a way it's like that game of creating an identity for yourself or being a certain kind of person is no longer, it's no longer necessary to play that game. And this is actually freedom. Now, I remember reading an interview with the Dalai Lama, and the Dalai Lama said, it's so wonderful just to wear the same robe every day, same clothes every day. I don't have to project anything but this, right? So, there's a kind of freedom that comes with what we would say is having a free choice, right? Getting up when you want and so on. But, often that's not really liberating. And our culture, our society is based on this idea of free choice, have it your way, But actually, so much of that is like a social minefield where we're always under pressure to make the right decision, make the right choice. And the right choice is the one that will sort of like identify us as an intelligent, discerning person or a daring, fun person or a successful, dynamic person and so on. And none of those choices are really free. There are moments in our lives where we realize this instinctively. Sometimes what happens to people is this, you're on a path and suddenly you realize you don't want to be on this path, but you don't know what path you should take, right? Maybe that's happened to you, maybe not. But people, sometimes people can be on a road in life and suddenly they realize, I don't want to be on this path. And this can happen to people when they're 50 or 40 or 60, but it often happens to people when they're young, right? You're doing what your parents told you to do in life, and you're doing everything you're supposed to do, and suddenly you realize this is not what I want to do. And the interesting thing is there are millions of people who are like 25 years old or 40 years old who know what they don't want, but they don't know what they want. Right? Maybe you've been there, right? Where you don't know what you don't want, but you don't. And how is it possible that people don't know what they want? They don't know what they want. People typically go through life doing what other people expect, or doing what will make them feel that, all human beings, to some degree, go through life making decisions about how others will view them. And the hope is that others will view me approvingly and with respect. And that's a perfectly wonderful motivation. But, we can drive ourselves crazy trying to be approved of others in that way. And if you live your life solely in terms of being approved by others, you run the risk of waking up one day and saying, I don't know who I am or what I really want. So, I think the best way to discover who we are or what we really want is something like sesshin, where we take the approval of others right off the table, when you come to sesshin, right now you're in your apartments or you're in your houses, and you probably live with other people, and you've probably made some kind of a deal with them to not to bother you while you're meditating, which would be a good thing. And while you're at sesshin, you don't have to worry about your appearance. You don't have to worry about the approval of others. People can see you in the screen, and hopefully, you know, you're not moving too much, so you're encouraging them not to move. But you know, other than that, you know, nobody's passing judgment on you. Nobody's assessing your hairstyle and so on. You know, most people are just sitting with their eyes half open, watching their breath. And you know, that's in one sense, that's very, very constraining, very, very constricting. But in another sense, you know, that's very liberating. It's like we've taken off the table the issue of what kind of image you want to project to others. We've taken off the table, actually, all kinds of choices. It's like you don't have any choice. You're just sitting watching your breath. I mean, you can leave, you can turn off your computer and go away, but in a deeper sense, right, this is now like beyond choice. And when we're beyond choice, we have the opportunity to discover like something deeper about ourselves and our lives. You know, when you, I have a, my one of my teacher's teachers was a person whose name was Shinichi Hisamatsu. Shinichi Hisamatsu was a Zen monk and philosopher in Japan, very famous Zen teacher and philosopher. And he created a koan that he used to give to his students, and it goes like this. What do you do when there's nothing you can do? What do you do when there's nothing you can do? What do you do when there's nothing you can do? You know, when you come to Sesshin in a certain way, there's nothing you can do. It's all determined for you. We're going to be on the cushion by 7. 8 o'clock is sutra recitation at 7. 8 o'clock zazen. 9:30 breakfast, 10:30 zazen, 11:30 teisho, and so on. So there's nothing you can do, right? If you want to stay at Sesshin, you have to go through the routine. But actually, you know, this is really liberating. It's liberating in a much more profound way than having quote-unquote free choice. Because, you know, when you are, you could say, trapped like this, trapped in this structure, you know, it's like you drop out of your small self and you begin to experience that world which is beyond choice, beyond gain and loss, right and wrong, right? It's like when I was in that state of hysteria in Santa Fe 45 years ago, you know, I suddenly realized I just need to sit down and be quiet. And when I sat down and I watched my breath, it was like suddenly I was released from the curt self who was trapped by all of this disappointment and distress and fear about the future. And I could be present with what was happening. And that's real liberation. That's really liberation. You know, when things are happening, we can't control them, right? So, you know, we didn't make the COVID pandemic, you know, maybe some problems have come your way during this period, and they're not your fault, you know. And we can feel completely out of control and completely overwhelmed by circumstances in our lives. You know, but as long as we remain in that mindset, in that way of seeing things, we're going to experience, you know, like acute emotional distress. Because we're imagining ourselves as separate from everything around us, and we're trying to protect ourselves or control circumstances we can't control. This is like a formula for unhappiness, right? So basically, you know, when we sit down on the cushion and we're trapped in this structured use of our time. You know, at first you may feel trapped. You may feel like this is unbelievably regimented. But, you know, some of the people in this Zoom room have been doing Zazen for a long time. And the reason they come back is they realize that, you know, it looks like we're trapped. It looks like we're highly regimented. But actually, you know, when you sit down on the cushion and you watch your breath and you focus on the moment, there's like a moment of transformation. And suddenly it's like you're liberated in a way that I think is unlike any other kind of freedom I've ever experienced. You know, it's like when we're no longer orbiting around the small self or trying to preserve the small self, we begin to connect with everything around us, and actually it's very reassuring. It's like, you know, when you're in the small self, it feels like everything is falling apart. For the small self, you know, the small self is always out of control. Everything is always falling apart. And, you know, the more you recoil at that, or the more you try to control the uncontrollable situation, the more anxiety and separateness you feel. But when you sit down and think, you let yourself be trapped, you could say, regimented, this very simple structure. You step into it and you begin to watch your breath with a straight back and so on and so on. You begin to drop out of your small self and you begin to feel, I would say, supported and connected, you know, even loved, you know. Dogen said, you know, to practice Zen is to study the self. That's step one. Step two is to study the self, is to forget the self. So when we sit down on the cushion and we watch the breath, we're studying the self. When we watch the breath for a while, our minds begin to go blank and we forget about ourselves. It's like step one, to practice Zen is to study the self. Step two, to study the self is to forget the self. Step three, this is the most important step. He says, to forget the self is to become one with the 10,000 things. See? So when we begin to do Zazen and we begin to forget the self, the result is that we begin to feel connected to everything around us, everything and everyone around us, supported, held, affirmed, loved. All of those things are right there if we can step out of our small self consciousness. And that's what we're doing here at Sesshin. Chinzo came to see Shifuku. Shifuku drew a circle in the air. Chinzo said, I have no object in coming here. Why do you bother to draw a circle? Shifuku closed the door of his room. So, Secho's verse, perfect the circle, pure the sound, bright and abundant the encircling jade, loaded on horses and mules. Loaded on board the iron boats, given to those who know the peace and freedom of land and sea. So look, you know, if you can find that place beyond the small self that connects with everything, it doesn't matter whether you're in the silence of your meditation room or you're busy in the world, right? Always connected. He put down the tackle to fish the turtle. Secho's comments here, monks throughout the world can't jump out of it.